Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC, made on Varick Street.
Everybody loves a song with a good beat. It practically taps your toe for you, even if you're one of those people who thinks that he or she's been born with two left feet. But have you ever wondered why you move to music, even when sometimes the music doesn't have an obvious beat at all? Well, Marius Kozak, an assistant professor of music at Columbia University, has been studying the ways we physically respond to sound, and he joins me here in the Soundcheck studio. Marius, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you're a violinist, right?
Yes.
Playing classical music, country fiddle, what species of violin?
I was trained as a classical violinist. I started when I was 7 years old. And then after college, or actually in college, I started experimenting with other styles, jazz. And then a friend of mine started a country band in Chicago. And so I just joined and, you know, the rest is history.
Well, at what point did you start to notice, you know, people moving maybe in sort of common ways through these very disparate types of music, classical and jazz and country?
Well, that realization came late because my first research interest was actually concerned time, our experience of time and how music can alter that experience. I had a very powerful experience with playing Henrik Gorecki's Third Symphony, which is extremely repetitive, extremely long. And at one point, I found that I became so engaged with the music that my sense of any temporal flow just completely stopped. So once I started looking more into it, I realized that time and music have something in common, which is motion.
Right.
And specifically human motion. So that's really how I got into studying how people move.
That Gorecki Third Symphony that you're talking about, that is a piece where a lot of the interest lies in the fact that Gorecki is kind of stretching out your sense of time to the point where you almost feel like the work is going to collapse, you know, that the structure won't hold because it's being so stretched out. And yet somehow he makes it work. And that sense of, you know, kind of being adrift from the usual sense of time, if I listen to that piece, I don't find myself moving a lot, although there are parts of it where my head will just, like, start nodding along. Is that what you're talking about, that even with that kind of extended sense of time, we're still kind of moving physically?
Right. So my experience as a performer was literally movement, and I think that's what contributed to my altered experience of time. But what I found subsequently in my own work, studying how people move to music, was that regardless of any regularities in terms of beat or any kind of structure, people can respond with their bodies to certain musical cues in very consistent ways.
Mm-hmm. So you've begun this research. You've been doing this now for a number of years. And there's like a kind of a battery of tests that you give to people, right? Like audio tests.
We have a set of, and by we, I mean myself and a colleague of mine at the University of Oslo, whose name is Christian Nimoyen. We have a set of musical excerpts, about each one about 30 seconds long, taken from actual musical repertoire, mm-hmm. contemporary musical repertoire. And we bring people into a motion capture studio, dress them up in a skin-tight suit with reflective markers on it, and we ask them to move to what they hear.
Mm-hmm. So you do actually ask them to move?
Yes, we do. We explicitly ask them to
move. If you didn't ask them to move, would they move anyway?
And that's going to be part of a future study.
Okay.
We would like to covertly motion capture people when they're just listening and see whether or not there's some kind of movement.
Right, right. I guess if you're putting a motion capture suit on someone, you can't be too surreptitious about that.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right, so let's hear some of these clips that you use in the experiments. This first one is from Toru Takemitsu. What do we do here?
Well, first you will hear a beep that signifies that the music is about to start, which is exactly what the participants heard in our experiments. And if the listeners are at home and are able to do so, you know, perhaps get up and try to move to what you hear, because that's exactly what people were asked to do.
All right. We're speaking with Dr. Marius Kozak, assistant professor of music at Columbia University. This is part of his research into how we respond physically to music. Just a little excerpt from the late Japanese composer Toru Takemitsu from his piece Coral Island. There's no steady pulse or rhythm here, right?
Right. It's just a wash of sound, basically, building to a climax and then dissipating.
So what did it tell you? How do people move when there isn't the obvious kind of four-on-the-floor beat that we're so used to?
It seems that people respond to very similar cues across the spectrum of expertise. So we had both music experts and non-experts. We had dance experts and non-experts. And we found certain cues in the music that people were responding to similarly. Mm-hmm. And specifically, they were responding to strong changes in texture. So loudness, instrumentation.
So when those flutes start rising up out of the kind of the murk of the score, is that a moment where you would see people physically respond somehow?
That would be one of those, yes. Listeners are very sensitive to changes in loudness, and that's one of the factors that has a direct effect on the amount of movement people make, the energy in the movement, so to speak.
Now, the Takemitsu is, you know, it has this kind of misty quality to it. This next piece begins to have some semblance of rhythm, although not maybe a steady one. So let's hear a little bit of this, again, from Dr. Marius Kozak's research into how we respond physically to music. So that's music from the Austrian composer Olga Neuwirth, not mm-hmm. so well known here in the States, but a big reputation in Europe, from her soundtrack to the film The Long Rain. So there's lots of, you know, even though there isn't a lot of percussion per se, you have those percussive attacks on the clarinet and things like that. So how did people respond to, how did they move to that?
So here we're starting to hear a more regular organization of these sounds in time. And we saw a corresponding, beginnings of an organization in terms of when people started to move. Mm-hmm. So in other words, we would start to see patterns emerge. And those patterns would be very similar from one participant to another, to the point where people would actually react to the music at the same time, even though they were each tested individually.
Mm-hmm. So, and how would they? What would that reaction look like?
Some people moved their entire bodies. Others just stood there and moved their hands. Still others used the entire motion capture space. So we ended up looking at very specific features of movement, specifically velocity and acceleration.
So the idea isn't that we make the same motion at the same time, but we do make some motion. There are certain cues that you can almost predict. This is when these people are going to start moving.
Exactly, exactly. And oftentimes we would find similar features in terms of size of the movements. For example, louder sounds generally engender bigger movements, more aggressive movements.
Now, I found at the end of that clip, as these kind of, again, these percussive attacking sounds on the wind instruments began to build up, I kind of found my head sort of nodding in search of a beat, mm-hmm, you know, which I think there was one underneath. It's just not explicit in the score. Is that what the brain is looking for? Is some kind of regular periodicity, some regular rhythm in music?
That's an interesting question. We did find that with a number of these excerpts that were almost periodic. And I would steer clear of talking about the brain here. My work is specifically on embodied cognition. So in other words...
Explain what that is.
It's a area of research which takes as its starting point the notion that our mind is not somehow captured in our brain exclusively. Rather, our entire bodies constitute our minds. And in fact, there is a more radical branch called situated cognition, which would claim that our environment is also a part of our mind. So for example, when you pick up a pencil to take notes, that would be a part of your mind.
The pencil
and the paper on which you're writing.
Mm-hmm.
So having said that, people do try to find regularities when they're not there and try to impose those regularities on the music.
All right, we're speaking with Dr. Marius Kozak, assistant professor of music at Columbia University, about his research into how humans respond physically to music, and we're hearing some of the audio cues that he uses in his research. You've chosen for the most part contemporary classical music, which means that most of your subjects, the people you're putting in these motion capture suits, they're not going to have any familiarity with it. Was that part of the reason for this choice?
Yes, that was an explicit choice on our part. We wanted people to respond spontaneously. So mm-hmm. music that they had, that a lot of them actually came in asking whether this was music. But almost all of them came out saying that was the most enjoyable lunch hour they had in a long time.
All right, so we heard the Takemitsu, very, you know, kind of floating and Eastern sounding, the Neuwirth, which begins to have this kind of implied rhythm, perhaps. There's certainly some kind of attack to it. Then we come to this music by the English composer Harrison Birtwistle. And again, this is part of Marius Kozak's experiment. Music from Harrison Birtwistle, one of the leading lights in the avant-garde scene in Great Britain. Yeah, it's funny, if you had said this is the soundtrack to some zombie movie or something, you know, people would probably rush out and buy it.
Right.
It's pretty clear here. There are those sharp stabbing notes, those attacking sounds. That's got to be where people start moving.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, in fact, we saw, you know, when we heard that kind of wash of sound in the beginning, people were moving in various ways. Whereas once we get to the clear metrical organization of music, where the beat is very regular between different participants, we would see correspondences in the 90th percentile, meaning that almost everybody would move at the same time.
Mm-hmm. And again, they may not move the same way, but they would move at that moment in the piece.
Exactly.
They'd be kind of strong movements as opposed to maybe, you know, a subtle, slight movement of the hand or wrist or something?
Right. I think there's a level of confidence that comes out of this regular organization. And it carries over. I mean, in the excerpt that we just heard, the regular organization stops at a certain point. But the effect of moving regularly would carry over into those parts as well.
So once you've kind of gotten the body used to the idea of responding to these sounds, even when that kind of regular rhythm disappears, the body has now sort of been entrained to move.
Exactly. And entrainment is the correct word to use here. It's our ability to synchronize with some sort of an external stimulus that is regular.
All right. Let me throw a bit of regular rhythm into the mix here. This is Marius. This is not from your experiment, but it'd be interesting to get your opinion of this. Zeppelin's version of When the Levee Breaks. Now, John Bonham starts wailing away on those drums, and we're both sitting here with our heads nodding, and, you know, my feet are moving and before I'm even aware of it when that drum break starts.
Mm-hmm.
Is that 90th percent? Is that 100th percent? Is it really rare to find someone who can't move when they listen to that?
Yeah, I think it's extremely rare. A lot of people say that they have no rhythm, that they can't dance. But I have a sense that in many instances it's cultural, that almost everybody, once they get the feeling of it, they can start moving. And what's interesting about this, the Led Zeppelin, is that, you know, you have the drums giving a very regular beat that we're both moving to, like you said. But then that guitar comes in with a melody that has a different rhythm against that beat. And what's great about our bodies is that we can move to both of these at once, at the same time. So our head would do one kind of rhythm, our feet would do a different kind of rhythm.
So there are people in, like, the Balkans who grow up listening to music in sevens and nines and 13s, and you think, these people must be counting like crazy to dance to these pieces. And yet it's like, you know, they're just right there in perfect sync with the music.
Right, because I don't think they're counting. I think they're just feeling the music.
So in your research, are you at the position now where you can say something definitively about how the human body responds to music?
Not at all. This branch of research is very new, and it really developed once motion capture technologies have become better and more widely available. You know, we're still pioneering our models of how humans move, and it's because everybody moves so differently, and yet everyone has that capacity, and everyone responds to music. Seems to respond to music in very similar ways.
Marius Kozak, assistant professor of music at Columbia University. He's been studying how humans respond physically to sound and specifically to music. Marius, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
This is Soundcheck. Thanks for listening. Stay connected by subscribing to the Soundcheck podcast on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook, and download the new WNYC mobile app for free. See you next time. I'm John Schaefer.